Welcome to a special issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Recording and first availability, Yom Shlishi, Tuesday, the fourth day of Iyar 5780, which is Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day for IDF soldiers and victims of terror, which precedes Yom Ha'atzma'ut, which begins this evening, corresponding this year to April 28th. I don't know when you're going to be listening to this. Some people might actually catch it on their Yom HaZikaron, and other people may be only on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And I would imagine people will not really get around to it until Thursday, Friday, or later, and it will be after Yom HaTzmaut. So you could take this as a current topic, or a retrospect, or however you want to look at it. What you heard at the beginning of the show was Shai Abramson, the chief chazan of IDF, with the choir of the Rabbanut Tzva'it, the Israeli Army's chaplaincy choir. It was recorded not on the Yom Ha'atzma'ut, but on a more somber day, and therefore it is a cappella, and therefore I had no qualms about putting it on, as I am still before Yom Ha'atzma'ut in this recording. Last night at the Kotel, there was a ceremony opening the Memorial Day for IDF soldiers and terror victims. It was the first time that it was not attended to by a large audience. It was broadcast on national television, and everyone was wearing masks, the people that were there, including President Rivlin, who spoke very movingly, and the IDF chief of staff, and Shai Abramson sang Hatikva. The mood of today, we had a siren last night at 8 o'clock for 1 minute, and this morning at 11 o'clock for 2 minutes, and people came out onto their balconies, so they were aware of other people who were standing at attention during the siren. It is a very moving experience to be here for that. And I will make a negative comment, and that is there are TV reports with video of certain, let's call them fringe members of the Haredi community who walk around on purpose while everyone else is standing still. This is not only disrespectful, it is a desecration of God's name. The average Israeli who sees this, and if you want to blame the media for covering it, I don't know if you could do that. It's the regular average Israeli who sees that, does not understand what he's watching, and associates that kind of disrespectful behavior with all religious people, or at least with the what they call the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredim, and the Hasidic community, even though many of the Rabbonim from those communities speak about this behavior as unacceptable. So I'm going to try not to be negative, but I can't help it, and that's unfortunate. I always lean back when I talk about Yom HaTzma'ut, I lean back on Chanukah, because on Chanukah you had split in the community, the Jewish community, of those who wanted to revolt against Greek oppression and restore the Beit HaMikdash to functioning, and you had Jews that were very happy with their Hellenized new culture and lifestyle, and were opposed for that kind of action. The result of Chanukah, meaning the miracle of the victory and the miracle of the oil, was followed by another 200 years or so of very tumultuous times. You had immediately continuation of fights between Jews in Israel and the Syrian Greeks and their other countries in their empire. You had Kohanim, through whom the miracle of Chanukah was wrought, the Hashmonaim, who usurped the kingdom of Israel, which belongs only to the tribe of Yehuda, and that was considered a very negative thing. You had, in subsequent generations of Hashmonaim, Hasmoneans, you had kings who would kill off their threatening sons, sons-in-law, cousins, uncles, nephews, you name it, in order to protect their kingdom. You had some who made deals with the Romans for support. You had others who were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idol worshippers. And there is no remnant of the Hashmonaim after this whole period of time. They were totally wiped out, did not have descendants that survived, and it was because of their various misconducts. I'm not now faulting Matityahu, nor his five sons, but later generations were abominable. And yet, Chanukah is Chanukah. We celebrate it for 8 days. We say full Hallel on each day. And I hope some of you already are getting my point. Next topic. It's all going to be related, but I'm going to jump from one thought to another. I had a guy, one of more than one, who came up to me a number of years ago and said, you know, it's really sad. If Yom HaTzma'ut were not during Sfirat HaOmer, I would celebrate it. But what can I do? It's in the Omer. Can't listen to music, can't take a haircut, can't shave. And my comment to him, my first reaction was that you grab the auxiliary and ignore or throw away the main point. In Hebrew, that sounds better. It's tafaspa tafel v'heniachata ikar. The fact of the matter is that hair cutting, shaving, marrying, and as an extension of the prohibition of marrying, music, although if I get a chance, I'll mention something about that, is guided as a practice that developed from the wording in halacha that it is appropriate without the Beit HaMikdash and because of events that occurred during this time to be noheg tetzat avelut, to have the custom and the practice of a little bit of mourning, token mourning. It is not full-blown avelut of the loss of a close relative, nor is it full-blown avelut as the 9 days, or at least the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, if not all of the 9 days and all of the 3 weeks. That's real avelut. This is Kitzat Avelut. Shulchan Aruch says, I've seen it in Mishnah Berurah, I don't know where his source is. Mishnah Berurah says that if there's a Brit Milah during the Omer, the father of the baby, the Sandek, on whose lap the baby will be circumcised, and the Mohel, the circumciser, are all allowed to take haircuts and shave in honor of the Brit. Because, says the Mishnah Berurah, it is a holiday for them. It is a holy day for them. You see by that the prohibition of haircutting, or the custom of not cutting the hair, is not absolute. For example, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there is no way, no how, that you could take a haircut, no matter what the conditions are, because it's essentially, intrinsically forbidden. It isn't essentially, meaning part of the essence of the counting period between Pesach and Shavuot, it only became that way because of tragic events which were associated with this period of time. But besides the Mohel, Sandek, and father of the baby on their Brit Milah for their child, and you have the following. Last Friday was Erev Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Erev Shabbat Rosh Chodesh. The two-day Rosh Chodesh of Iyar, Friday and Shabbat. The halachic sources clearly say that even if your usual practice is not to shave or take a haircut from right after Pesach, or through Pesach and onward to Lag BaOmer, because of the confluence of Rosh Chodesh, Erev Shabbat, and Shabbat, you could take a haircut Likrat Shabbat, in honor of Shabbat. And if Lag BaOmer falls on a Motzoi Shabbat Sunday, then the halacha allows you to shave on Friday, which is the 31st day in the Omer, which is a day that you would ordinarily not be allowed to take a haircut or a shave. But because Yom Kippur, Lag BaOmer is after Shabbat, and to wait until Lag BaOmer would be disrespecting Shabbat, permission is to take a haircut and shave on Friday of Erev Lag BaOmer. Except for Sfardim. Ashkenazim do that. Sfardim don't shave or take a haircut until after Lag BaOmer. But that's another story. Add all of this up together. And again, you know me. If you know me, you could figure out what I'm driving at. And probably even if you don't know me. And that is that the date, the holiday that was declared for celebrating the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 on Ha'ir, which was May 14th in that year, is, in my book, and I'm not the only one who says this, a no less joyful occasion and cause to honor as we pay homage to God for what he did than a Brit Milah is to even the Mohel. There's a story they tell of Rav Herzog, first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, Ashkenazi, who was approached by a soldier and asked if it would be permitted to get married on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Rav Herzog said yes. The soldier said, "Really?" Rav Herzog said, "No." The soldier said, "But you just said yes." Rav Herzog answered, "You asked me if you could get married on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. I said yes. You doubted that that was a correct thing to say, so you shouldn't get married on Yom Ha'atzma'ut." Just store that story if you've never heard it. The establishment of the State of Israel, preceded by the UN Declaration and vote in November of 1947, Kuftet B'November, the 29th of November, and before that, the Balfour Declaration and other things, all came together at the termination of the British mandate for the declaration of the state. The British mandate was scheduled to end at midnight on a Friday night, May 14th. The decision by the almost born State of Israel leaders was to bring back the declaration by 8 hours to 4 o'clock in the afternoon in order to not desecrate the Shabbat. That already should tell you something, because we're not talking about totally observant people. There were some, but most were not, of the founding fathers. But they had the, I don't know what the right word is. It's floating around in my head, but I'll leave it for you to fill in the blank. They had the blank to incorporate all the Jewish people, those who keep mitzvot and Torah, as well as those who don't. And a decision like that is something that has continued throughout the 72-year history of the people, of the state. You had Yom Ha'atzma'ut, which was originally on 5th of Iyar. When it fell on Friday, it was observed on Friday. It was then realized that there would be Chilul Shabbat, desecration of Shabbat, in folding up and transporting chairs after the public ceremonies and other things like that. So a decision was made to pull back Yom Ha'atzma'ut, if it falls on Friday or Shabbat, to the previous Thursday, which means that Yom Ha'atzma'ut can be a Thursday or Friday. I'm sorry, it could fall, Ha'ir can fall on a Friday or a Shabbat, but it's observed on Thursday, which could be the third or the fourth of Iyar, however it works out. Many, many years later, not too long ago, a further decision was made that when Yom Ha'atzma'ut would fall on Monday, Yom HaZikaron, which is the day before, would be Sunday, which means it would begin on Motzoi Shabbat, and in order to avoid Chilul Shabbat, Yom Ha'atzma'ut was pushed ahead to the 6th of Iyar, a Tuesday. So it turns out, and I'm telling this a lot because there's a point tied into this which I think is very significant. It turns out that Yom Ha'atzma'ut, only a minority of the years, is observed on the 5th of Iyar, like this year, But if it falls on a Monday, it's pushed to a Tuesday. If it falls on a Friday or Shabbos, it's pulled back to Thursday. It can't fall on Thursday on its own. It can't fall on Sunday on its own. And that's part of the story. But here's the real point in this issue. When the rabbinate approached the government and said, we have a problem with Chilul Shabbat when Yom HaTzmaut is a Thursday, or a Friday or a Shabbos, or later a Monday, the government could have said, do whatever you want, and we'll do whatever we want. They didn't do that. And that was from both sides. Because the rabbinate could have said, to avoid Chilul Shabbat, move the national observance of Yom HaTzma'ut back or forth as is needed, to avoid Chilul Shabbos. But the religious community will continue to daven Tfilah Chagigi with Psukei Dezimra of Shabbat and Yom Tov, and with Hallel, and with the reading without a bracha of a Haftorah. And the religious celebration will still stay on the 5th of Iyar, which was the date of Hakamat HaMedina. Somebody was very wise in all of this and said, we are one people, and our holidays belong to everybody, and to split the religious observance and the national observance would be a terrible thing. And I salute the Rabbanim, when, of whichever era this took place, that they had the sense, the feeling, again, I'm missing a word here, of not wanting to split, and that invested a religious flavor in the observance of Yom HaTzmaut. I mentioned that when the British mandate ended and the British army pulled out and the state of Israel was declared a Jewish state, it was the first time in well over 2,000 years that there was Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. And I know that it should be more than it is, but the progress is there from 48 to 67, since 67, and then the annexing of the Golan Heights and other features, and what else is becoming in the next few months, we don't know yet, but it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu has already secured a public statement from the powers that be in the United States that they would approve of extending sovereignty. Not the point. Until the establishment of the State of Israel, there was no place on earth, including Palestine, which was the name of Eretz Yisrael at the time, no place on earth where a Jew was able to come to live without being subject to a quota and to other restrictions. It boggles my mind when I think of the prohibition imposed by the British government forbidding the Jews who davened at the Kotel from blowing shofar at the conclusion of Yom Kippur. Where's your religious freedom? Where's your Jewish homeland? And obviously, that prohibition doesn't exist anymore. But to me, the establishment of the state, if there would be no other positive, and I believe there are many, many positives, for no other reason than opening the door to the Jewish people to return to Eretz Yisrael, then it deserves our recognition, acknowledgement, and thanks to God to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the machinations that led to the establishment of the state. So now I have to throw in what some people object to. No, we're not allowed to have a Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael until the time of Mashiach. We promised that. I said, excuse me, what we promised, the oaths that were imposed on us, were not to band together outside of Israel, to band together, and to come in force to take over this country. And we never did that. We were not allowed to establish a state here without the permission of the nations of the world. And we never did that. Because in November 29th, we got the world's permission by a majority vote of the then members of the General Assembly of the United Nations. And even way before this, when people started coming back in the mid-1800s and onward, they were not in violation of anything because individual Jews were never banned by halacha from coming to Eretz Yisrael and living here. The situations might have been difficult, but there was never an isur imposed on individuals. Once the individual and another family and another group and another family and another family came and there was a sizable yeshuv here, then there is total permission from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, of establishing an army to protect itself and declaring a state and establishing a government in order to enhance the life of the yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael, which is exactly what happened. Furthermore, or as some of us used to say in Brooklyn, furthermore, the two oaths that I mentioned before were accompanied by a third oath imposed on the nations of the world not to overly persecute their guests, the Jewish people. And I think everyone would agree that the nations of the world violated that oath so many times throughout history that we are no longer bound, if ever, with the two oaths of not coming and taking over this land. So you can argue from today till tomorrow, and I am totally confident and with good backing that this is a sound way of looking at it. Which brings me to a strawberry. Question. Strawberries are seasonal, even though they can be found at other times of year, but fresh strawberries have a beginning of a season. Does one say, Ashehechiyanu v'kimanu v'higyanu l'zman hazeh, on a first of the season strawberry? If you say yes, or if you say no, well, let's first say, neither answer is totally accurate because it depends on how you feel about the first of the season's strawberries. Did it excite you? Did it make your mouth water? Did you look at the prices in the shuk and see that you'll have to wait another couple of weeks before it comes down in order to enjoy the strawberries? But that is a cause for saying Shehecheyanu. To say, no, it's a Bori Pri HaAdamah and not a Bori Pri HaEitz is not halachically accurate. It goes for Bori Pri HaAdamah also. To say, no, I don't like strawberries, is a totally different story. Imagine your rabbi, who you call up and you say, I just got my first basket of strawberries fresh this season. Should I say Shehecheyanu? And I'm not talking about the Omer or not the Omer. That's not the point. And he says, no, I wouldn't because I don't like strawberries. But he doesn't say because I don't like strawberries. He says, no, I wouldn't. That is a very dishonest answer to the question. It is a halacha that became colored and tainted by his personal like or dislike of strawberries. Now, if somebody loves ice cream, and he hasn't had ice cream in a long time, and he wants to make Shekhinah on ice cream, he can't. That's not a matter of whether you like it or not. No matter how excited you are about a new ice cream, you don't make a Shekhinah on a new ice cream. But within Borei Pri Ha'etz and Borei Pri Adama, when they are seasonal and they trigger an excitement in the person, they are prime for Shekhinah v'kimonah v'kimonah l'zman hazeh. There are, just to fill in the picture, there are Shekhinahs that we say during the year that are not subjective. When you light candles on the first night of Hanukkah, you say a Shekhinah as one of the three brachot. If you don't enjoy lighting Hanukkah candles, you had a bad experience once when you struck a match and it set your hair on fire and you don't like to strike matches and fire scares you, you still have a halakhic obligation to light candles and you say a Shekhinah. It's not a subjective Shekhinah. None of the Chagim are. When it comes to new fruit, significant purchases, or what's on the books, seeing someone the first time in more than 30 days that you're very excited to see, a friend or a close relative, then those are subjective. And I don't want to get into the other ones, but the fact of the matter is, I'll mention one thing. Two different people can buy a new winter coat. And for one of them, it's a routine purchase every year. And it's not so exciting for them. And they don't make a Shekhinah. For someone else who buys a winter coat, the first one they've been able to buy in 10 years, and the other one was tattered and falling apart, would make a Shekhinah. Back to the point, which hopefully listeners have already picked up on. Can I take a haircut and shave for Yom Ha'atzma'ut? Can I say Hallel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut? I believe with all my heart that there are some people who you will ask that question to who do not have a positive view of Medinat Yisrael, and their natural inclination would be to say, no, you can't. It's Sfirat HaOmer, and we don't take haircuts and shave. Not counting, giving the argument I gave before of Brit Mila, they do not feel about Hakamat HaMedina as something special enough to thank God for, and they, again, what I said, taint or color their halachic decision based on their attitude towards the state. My arguments go in both directions. There is ample halachic authority on all sides of every question, halachic question, that people come up with during the Omer. Vis-a-vis Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Yom Yerushalayim, whatever. And if I have al da'at mi lismoch, on whom to rely, then I'm covered. I don't believe in making newfangled things on my own. But if a significant source will write that if you want to say a Shekhinah, have a new fruit and have in mind the Yom Ha'atzma'ut, when you say the Shekhinah, I'm in favor of that. To stam say a Shekhinah for Yom Ha'atzma'ut, I personally frown upon, because I don't think it conforms with the standards, the halachic standards of Shekhinah, but I digress. A person who is generally appreciative of what God did in allowing the establishment of the State of Israel, helped by his junior partners, the government, the provisional government before the Haganah and other armed forces, and continuing, are worthy of saying to God, thank you. And now you have the halakhic question about establishing a holiday after the time of Sanhedrin, before the time of the next Sanhedrin. That's a debate. But it should not be colored, which unfortunately it is, by an anti-Medina or a pariv attitude towards Medinat Yisrael. And let me add one more thing, and I think I'm getting too carried away, especially since I gave this yesterday as a 70-minute sheer on Zoom, and I had about a half an hour conversation with one of my daughters repeating some of these things. But I hope that I'm getting through to somebody. First, let me tell you, if you're living in Israel, then obviously this is not a pitch for Aliyah. If you're living in Israel, this is chizuk, strengthening your commitment. This is waking you up to be appreciative, even though when you first came, you were appreciative. And for some people, they get into a routine and it wears off. I will tell you with all honesty that for the 38 plus years that I'm here, I have never had any period of time, I won't define that, I never had a second of regret. I never had a period of time where I wasn't consciously appreciative of God for this opportunity. I realize, I can't say with every breath, but every so often, I take a deep breath and I have filled my lungs with air of Eretz Yisrael and air of Yerushalayim. However many times I breathe during a day and however many days I am privileged to live, I will have a very significant amount of Avira Da'ara, air of Eretz Yisrael, going through my pulmonary system. That moves me not from Chizuk, but to Idud. Idud is encouragement. If some of my friends and other people who I don't know so well, who are Torah observant and living elsewhere, you are not only missing the atmosphere of the Chagim here in Israel, you're not only missing the special feeling as Shabbat approaches, you are missing every single breath and every single step that you can walk. I didn't mean to get onto this, but as long as I'm there, I will say this. I'm a product of a Hapoel Mizrahi parents, religious Zionists, although they weren't called that in those days, and Bnei Akiva. And nothing that took me away from this direction. But it wasn't until age 15, as a Madrich in Bnei Akiva, that I recognized that the thoughts and the feelings became my own. Not just what I was spoon-fed from my parents, not just what I received every week at a sicha with Bnei Akiva Madrichim, but now I was a Madrich and then a Merakei Snif, and I had to give over this to other people, and it became mine. It wasn't until 6 years later, when I was 21, summer of 1969, for those who don't know my age or my birthday, I am 3 days older than the Medina, which gives me that extra special feeling about it. So I have already reached 72 Sunday, and the Medina won't reach it till tomorrow, tonight. They say I was showing off, and I forgot my train of thought here. I could go back and listen. I think I will. The benefit of pre-recording. I actually went back and I got my thread. Summer of 69, I was a madrich of a group from the Jewish agency called Machon Kayetz Dati. Through the organization, which now no longer exists, called Mizrahi Hatzair. That summer, I had assigned different kids each meal, each Shabbat, to give a Dvar Torah. And on Shabbat Nachamu, the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av, after Mincha, when we were on our way into the dining room for Seudah Shlishit, the kid that I had assigned to give a Dvar Torah came up to me and said, I forgot all about it, I'm not prepared, I'm not saying anything. It fell on me to say something. And we had just walked out of the shul, having just davened Mincha, and heard the reading of Parshat Ekev, the beginning of Ekev, for the following Shabbat. And I took a look back in that reading, and a verse, a pasuk, jumped off the page and smacked me on the forehead. It was Devarim chapter 8, verse 1, where Moshe says to the people, in God's name, Kol ha-mitzvah asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, all of the body of mitzvot that I am commanding you this day, meaning the whole Midbar experience, tishmerun la'asot, you shall be careful to preserve and do, lema'an tichyun urevitem virishtem et ha'aretz. Now I must apologize because I'm not 100% sure those are the words, and I'm not going to erase them if I made a mistake. I'm just looking them in the printed Chumash now. So we're talking about the beginning of Ekev. Coming up, here it is. Well, if this is a pasuk that hit me on the head, I at least should remember it perfectly, but I didn't. Kol ha-mitzvah asher anochi mitzavcha hayom tishmerun la'asot, lema'an tichyun, so that you shall live, urvitem, and multiply, uvatem, and come, virishtem et ha'aretz, and settle the land, asher nishba Hashem lavoteichem, that God promised your ancestors. I looked at that. I subsequently found several other psukim that say the same thing in different words. Basically, that the purpose of a Torah life is to be lived in Eretz Yisrael, if possible. And it is possible, and it works out very nicely for many, many, many Jews. The subsequent part of that chapter is, in God's name, Moshe is saying, Ki Hashem Elokecha, that God is taking you, El Eretz Tova, to a good land, Eretz Nachalei Mayim, a land of streams, Ayanot Utohomot, and groundwater and springs, Yotzim Babika Uvahar, that come out in the valleys and the hills. Eretz Chita Usora, you know that pasuk. Eretz Asher Lo V'Meskenut Tochal Bo Lechem, Lo Techsar Kol Ba, and then V'Yochalta V'Savata U'Virachta Hashem Elokecha Al Ha'aretz. We say Birkat HaMazon, the first bracha is Hazon Et HaKol. God feeds all creatures. The second bracha gets very particular, not just to Jews, but to Jews eating food of the land, in the land, and blessing God al ha'aretz v'al ha'mazon. Now, I know that there are Jews around the world who bench, And they say, Al Ha'oretz v'Al Ha'mazon. And I honestly believe, and I want you to hear it from me, even if it makes you squirm. The saying, Baruch Ato Hashem Al Ha'oretz v'Al Ha'mazon, sounds kind of hollow when it is said elsewhere, and sounds real and genuine when you say it in Eretz Yisrael. I think I have said more than enough. There are still a lot of points to cover on this topic, but the complaints that people have about mostly non-religious and some anti-religious people establish the state, so why should I thank God for it? Or look at what they do, look at what they did. They supposedly keep Shabbat, but the workers work on Shabbat for the railroad. Oh, that's a problem. But in essence, Shabbat is the day of rest in the state of Israel. And that is a positive. The fact that some people don't keep it properly is a problem that needs to be worked on in hopefully a pleasant way that will encourage and not force people. But the kivun, the basis of the statehood, the fact that with the establishment, hardly a moment passed when someone made the Shehecheyanu out loud, and to me that established the character of the state, which has had its problems, but has had wonderful, wonderful things as well. If I'm talking about a glass that is half empty or half full, number one, if the glass is actually half empty and half full, and a person is thirsty, he should always say thank you and be appreciative of the half full glass. If he shows that appreciation, maybe he'll get more. If he looks and says, what, you don't give me a half glass? Look at how much is empty. That is a lack of hakarat hatov for the half glass that's full. There are people who say, half glass? No, this is everything. We have our state. We don't need anything. Heard a guy once say, back in the States, my wife used to light candles, and that was our token attachment to Jewish identity. Then we came to live in Israel, and we don't need to light candles anymore. That's sad. You could cry when you hear that. But that's a challenge for us to do something about it. Okay, the traditional greeting of Yom HaAtzmaut is one person says to the other, Moadim L'Simcha, Good Yontif, and the answer to that is L'Geula Shlema, to the final redemption. That encapsulates, and it's said in other things as well in Yom HaAtzmaut, that encapsulates what I consider to be the proper approach. To say thank you to God for what you gave me, what you gave us, and I hate to ask for it, but I don't really hate to ask for it, and he doesn't hate to be asked for it, for the Geula Shlema. The people who don't see the and it's not a half, I believe it's three quarters, someone else will say it's a quarter, it doesn't matter. There is something there, and I believe we need, and we must thank God for it, together with our prayer for the Geula Shlema. And we have Zionists that are not religious or secular on one side, and we have religious people who are not Zionistic on the other side, some of whom are anti-Zionist, some are parav about Zionism, some are even Zionistic, but they don't mix it with their Torah way of life. I believe Chaval, Chaval, Chaval all the way around. Moadim l'simcha l'geula shlema.
המצא מנוחה נכונה על כנפי השכינה במעלות קדושים טהורים וגיבורים כזוהר הרקי לנשמות חללי מערכות ישראל שנפלו במלחמות ישראל בפעולות הגנה שירותם ושחרפו נפשם למות על קדושת השם ובעזרת אלוהי מערכות ישראל הביאו לתקומת האומה והמדינה ולגאולת הארץ ועיר האלוהים ולכל מי שנרצחו צלה בידי המרצחים מארגוני הטרור בעבור שאנו מתפללים לעילוי נשמותיהם לכן בעל הרחמים יסתירם בסתר כנפיו לעולמים בצרור בצרור החיים נשמותיהם אדוני הוא נחלתם וינוחו בשלום על משכבותם ויעמדו לגורלם לקץ הימים ונאמר